When singer and entertainer Tina Cross chose the hospice movement as the charity to benefit from her appearance in television's Dancing with the Stars, it was a choice influenced by her own experiences of caring. The first came early in her life, the second in more recent years.
Yes, my grandfather, back in the late 60s, was diagnosed with spinal cancer. And I don't know, in those days, you know, I was probably 10 at the time. I certainly wasn't aware about sort of care other than hospital care. But he was in hospital in Auckland for quite a few months, receiving treatment, etc. And at some point, they said to my mum, who's the eldest of his children, a big Māori Croatian family, "We can't do any more for him, take him home." And so the family, within the family, decided who would be the best option to move north. We were Auckland-based, and all the rest of my aunts and uncles were Auckland-based too. So mum and dad, with their six children, moved to Kaitaia to take care of granddad. He was in a wheelchair at the time. He was unable to walk. So it was really interesting because all of the actual care, and what I mean by that, I mean the washing, the lifting even. Very occasionally my uncles or my dad would help, but my grandfather was really reliant on my mum. And I guess it's because my mum actually has a nursing background, but maternity nursing. And he just felt comfortable with her being able to deal with his everyday needs. As a 10-year-old looking on, I sort of didn't think much of it. Now when I think back, I actually marvel at the fact that my mother took this on. In fact, my mother got really, really sick at the tail end of all this. But the moral to the story, two things really. My grandfather actually got better, which was incredible because I would say that a lot of it, I feel, was the whānau care around him. And in those days, hospice didn't exist. So, you had your family or you had the hospital sort of thing. But Grandad has told me the story many times. He was left a brochure on his bedside cabinet while he was at Auckland Hospital, which was about God and miracles. And my grandfather was never religious, not in any way, shape or form. He was a businessman through and through. And quite a successful one, so he never had time for any of that rubbish. You know, those would have been his exact words. When he was faced with this terminal illness and sick, obviously he said to me, "Well, look, I just decided I'd put my faith in something, and that was as good as anything." What he actually found, that however he dealt with it personally, and then he brought in the church as well into our home, we were living in his home in Kaitaia, he actually found a spiritual path. And he believed very, very firmly that that's why he got better.
That move north, I mean, when you look back on it, it's quite a big commitment to move a big family to look after, you know, one person in their home rather than the other way around.
Yes, well, it was, but to be perfectly honest with you, I guess it's one of those things where, for Māori families, I guess it's probably not that uncommon, but I wondered whether or not at the time we could have actually brought Grandad to us. But what was actually happening, a bit more of an insight, is he had a bus company to run. And he was very instrumental in running that. He felt that while he was still had it all upstairs and still, you know, coherent, that he was still going to be instrumental in running his business, even though he couldn't drive buses anymore. The other thing is my father joined the company. So we had a situation where, obviously, between the whānau, we worked out that mum was going to be his best caregiver. She was the one that he put most trust in and most faith in. And I think it's very personal. When you get to a point where you can't walk or you've got to be put into a wheelchair and you've got to be, you know, virtually toileted and certainly bathed or bedwashed, mum was actually showering him for a long time. I don't know how she did it. She was not a very big person. And Grandad was a big man. Even when he lost weight, he was still over 6 foot tall. The result of that was that he had the care that he wanted, definitely. He had the carer he wanted, and he also had family around him. Now, he had six children, his grandchildren, and a son-in-law who was working for his company, and my mum, who he put, you know, obviously all of his faith, and he was very comfortable with her. But I believe that back in 1970, and especially a 10-year-old like myself, I would never have heard the word spiritual in my family. I would say we were Anglican, but we were not church-going people. And I think, without us even knowing, we were Grandad's spiritual crutch, if you like, because we were the life of the home. You know, I mean, sometimes you would imagine that having too much noise around would actually be a bother for really sick people. But I think it actually did Grandad a lot of good. And I'll tell you something that he set for us, a little exercise that he set, which I have repeated to many people. He wrote a prayer that he circulated between his mokopuna, his grandchildren, and he had many in Auckland. And at 8 o'clock every night, those of us that could read, I mean, I was a middle age in my family, three older and three younger, or the eldest one wasn't there at the time. And those of us that could read had to kneel at his bedside every night at 8 o'clock, and this was happening throughout the other homes, my other cousins and aunts and uncles, probably four other homes, and we would read this prayer. And it was just part of, I think, Grandad's journey in terms of he believed he was going to become well. And that was a big part of it. We recited this prayer. I suppose I read it and probably thought, well, this is, you know, this is Grandad's way of getting better. Never actually occurred to me that the power of, first of all, the joining of people with the same message. Mm. And the message was very spiritual. It was based around God and Jesus. And I don't think I thought too much about religion. I mean, I'm not here to talk about religion, but it certainly made me realise that there was definitely something in it. And my grandfather lived. He didn't die after the 3 months that the doctor gave him. And he went on to become a minister. He was ordained 5 years later.
I mean, you never know why some people beat the odds. And obviously your mother had a big physical role in caring for him. But when you look back, do you think that whole, somehow the family being there, that spiritual aspect might have been the mind over matter thing?
I think it was definitely mind over matter for my grandfather. He was in the ultimate position where he felt very comfortable. He knew in his own mind that he was going to live. He also said, I'm going to drive buses again. And even when he was in a wheelchair, my uncles would actually put him on one of those, oh, I don't know, you lie down, you get wheeled under a vehicle? Trolley. He couldn't walk, but he was still getting under vehicles because he was a bit of a mechanic as well. The strange thing is, although my mother was the carer, the strange, unfortunate thing was while my grandfather was getting better, my mother was getting sicker. She actually, on the tail end of his recovery, had a kidney removed. We had no idea that while Grandad was crook and Mum was his right-hand man every step of the way, she was actually very sick herself, and she almost died.
And she knew, did she?
Yes, she did know. She felt that she had... Well, I think she felt that it was her duty, and she wasn't able to actually call on anyone else to perform the chores that she needed to do. I think she left it a little late myself. I think, you know, it would have been nice to think that she had perhaps taken herself to the doctor sooner. But as a child, I had no idea she was sick. I remember sitting on the couch with a hot water bottle, and I used to say, what's the viewers? She said, oh, I've just got a bit of a sore tummy. Mm-hmm. It was actually that kidney. Mm-hmm. It was completely and utterly rotten. And interesting too, because Grandad obviously had medication. Well, Mum freely admitted to me that she actually got hooked on his sleeping pills because she was taking them. She couldn't sleep. She was in so much pain herself. She put herself on the line, really, as a carer for Grandad, and she almost lost her own life. But, you know, you just don't know what happens in life, do you? I know that I took from that experience a big part of the culture, I think, is this whānau caring. And I didn't think twice at the time. I remember thinking, well, that's just what we do. And since Dancing with the Stars and supporting or naming hospice as my chosen charity, one of the things I was hoping to do, and I said this in as many interviews as I could, was raise awareness with Māori, with my own people, in terms of saying, I know we look after our own, because we did that with our own family, but what they now need to know is there's another service, there's another wonderful, caring service full of experts and volunteers who are there if you need it. And you know what? It's free.
So what impressed you, I mean, with your involvement with Dancing with the Stars and with hospice, which is a more, I guess, slightly more institutionalised way of caring, what were the things that struck you most about what happens in that process?
When you say institutionalised way of caring, I think, yes, hospice is an organisation, but every person I met, whether it was the Auckland-based hospices or the Wellington-based hospices, I found that, I mean, you can read people pretty well. I actually firmly believed, I got a real sense of they had already been almost enlisted into spirituality, because there's something about hospice that's not just We know that we can help with respite. Come in when you know things aren't going well at home. You can come to us. We know that they can help with the medical side of things, adjusting medication, etc. Because of the doctors obviously involved in hospice. But I think I never had a sense that it was anything like a sterilised environment. It was full to me. It was really full of caring people who genuinely wanted to be there, and I chose hospice, obviously, because I had a close link with a very dear friend of my husband's who was 35 and had a 14-month battle with cancer. And I know through his connection with hospice how fantastic they were. And that was my initial introduction to hospice. It wasn't around when Grandad was sick. But for Gavin, our dear friend who passed on 2 years ago this month, his wife Vanessa, who was an ex-nurse herself, spoke really highly. She said, look, I came from a nursing background and I know that I was able to call on them 24/7 when they could see that things were not, we weren't coping in the home. They would say, bring him in, he can stay here for however many days, weeks you want. And right at the very, very end, very important for her too, they gave her an indication of exactly when she needed to pretty much let him go. And they upped his dose of morphine in that last weekend, and she was able to call all of the close friends and family and say, be here.
Which must have been an interesting comparison with, you know, your experience with your mother, who was the sole carer and probably dragged quite a long way down, to see what can happen when there's time out.
Oh, it was two opposite extremes. And what I've forgotten to say about my mother is that she had six children to take care of. She was putting all of her time and energy into my grandfather. Not saying that we weren't well looked after, because we were. Some members of my family were older than myself. But I don't think it's possible for people to take that job on as a sole caregiver. My mother proved that. But, you know, when you think about it, there but for the grace of God, I'm not in that situation, and I'm not sitting there with somebody going through a terminal illness, you know, a child or a husband or whatever. So I think the friendship and the support that you need emotionally, I mean, I know my mother never got that. You know, I don't know how she coped. Whereas that's a big part now of hospice coming in and being just being there to listen, not just to Gavin when he was sick, but also to Vanessa. So it's not just about the terminally ill person. It's about their family and the closest people to them. And certainly, you've actually just brought this to my attention. My mother never had any of that. I doubt very much that she understood anything but, this is my mahi, this is my role, this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm the eldest daughter. We Māori look after our own, that's all there is to it. Mm. Not saying she didn't have a break now and again with some of the other rallies coming in, but she was certainly who my grandfather relied on 99% of the time. Had hospice been around in those days, you know, to be perfectly honest, I doubt they'd have used it. I think the concept of bringing somebody into the home is more difficult for Māori because it's very much a family thing, and when you need somebody else, you just get somebody else in the family. And we've discussed this ourselves. My mum's now 76, and between us all, she lives on the Gold Coast. We've said, well, what happens when mum gets sick? And believe me, with her seven children, six of us were there at the time, one of us will change our lifestyle to be able to bring her on board, to look after her until we can't look after her in the home anymore. But I know from experience with hospice that I wouldn't hesitate to call them if I needed to.
That was entertainer Tina Cross, and the charity Tina supported through Dancing with the Stars was Hospice New Zealand. Hospice New Zealand provides information, advice and support to people who have terminal illnesses and their families. You can learn more by phoning 04 381 0266 or visit their website www.hospice.org.nz.